So wait, by show of hands here, there's other, obviously the whole team's here. How many people shower at night? Oh, everybody but me. Interesting.
Okay. I really don't. I would prefer to
that's
shower.
That's awesome. So we had six
that's funny.
People shower at night. That's great.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super you. Hey everyone, it's Eric coming to you from beautiful Lake Tahoe, where I'm doing a performance around focus. First and foremost, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I think you'll get a lot out of today's interview with Aaron Weick. We cover a ton of ground. We talk about millennials and Generation Z. What are they thinking about as they look for their job? So if you're trying to hire some younger folks onto your team, this is a great conversation for that. Or it could be that you're like Aaron, you're a new mom. You have a great job that you love, but you also have a side hustle that's pulling at you. And what does that look like? How do you dedicate time to all of those? And when do you make a leap, if indeed you ever do make a leap? And then we also cover off if you happen to be in the job market yourself or you're looking to switch positions, what do you need to do in this digital era? We cover stuff like, do you have your photo on your resume? Is a resume more important or is LinkedIn more important? So anyways, I think you'll really get a lot of today's podcast. And once again, thank you so much for listening. Welcome to the Super You Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Qualman. Most of you know me as Equal Man. I'm super excited for today. We're going to test out a new format. We had such an amazing conversation just over coffee I did with Aaron Weick, who's sitting right next to me. You might be wondering, who's Aaron? So Aaron's a career coach at the University of Texas, and we get so many amazing people from the University of Texas on our team here at Equal Man. So if you ever send me a note saying thanks for the podcast, thanks for the amazing books, blah, 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 it's the result of the amazing talent that we get across the board. But we're going to learn a lot from her. That's why we have her in here. The conversation is going to be two-way. We're going to cover a lot of things. It's just like we're having coffee. I was too cheap to buy us coffee. Plus, it's in the afternoon. And as you know, if you read or listen to my books, if I have coffee after 2 o'clock, I cannot sleep. So we've got Aaron Weick, and we've got a new thing that we were laughing about before we got on here. It's all about, instead of the mic drop, it's the Weick drop. She also, when she's not at the University of Texas, she helps all professionals out there in their job search. And so we'll get into that, because I know some of you listeners out there might be thinking about switching careers. You might be looking for a new opportunity. So we'll go over to some of those details as well. But anyways, welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
No, it's wonderful to be here. And like I said, we'll start off with some questions that you might have that we're talking about when we sat down over coffee.
Yes. So I have questions about a lot of times you meet people that strictly are entrepreneurs or strictly work full-time day job. And I have both, and I love both. And so sometimes I feel like I'm searching for resources of, if you love your day job and you like what you're doing outside of it, where do you go from there? And one of your previous podcasts really resonated with me. It was talking about the side hustle, and you had mentioned how you didn't leave your job right away. You liked your job, and you built your side business for 4 years over the side. The side business is really important to me because it really helps people, and I am able to do that. But my bandwidth is, you know, about 1 to 2 clients a week. But I love my day job at the same time, and I feel it's really empowering for me to be there, and I feel like I'm finally in the right place with my career. So I've just been kind of balancing that. So part of why I reached out to you was thinking of creating content that helps more people, because when you can meet clients and you only have a bandwidth for 1 to 2 a week, that's it. But if you could create content that helps people, what does that look like? But there's a lot of content already out on the internet. We could search anything, like how do I find a job?
Right.
So if I were to create content, I need it to be valuable. It needs to be worth my time. It needs to be valuable for the person buying it. And so I kind of reached out to you to see if there's any way I could collaborate with you or get some help on what that would look like, because obviously you create a lot of digital content.
No, it's awesome. And I think we'll unpack those two things. Okay. They're two big things to unpack, because you've got your side hustle, which again, if you listen to that podcast, I'm glad it resonated, there's tons of resources out there and people saying, stop doing what you don't love and just go full on into your passion.
Yeah.
But just like I went through, and it sounds like you're going through as well, is that the hardest thing is when you love your job.
Right.
And so I loved all my jobs. And so I didn't jump into it right away. I straddled it for 4 years, mm-hmm. meaning that I'd take a vacation day and go speak and then come back. And then eventually I was able to talk to the owner of the company, quite a big company. Fortunately, it was the owner, privately held, but it's a huge company. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to go, okay, let's do this. You just said you can't manage your team because I had a pretty big team. Mm-hmm. But I want you to stay on board. It sounds like you want to stay on board because you love the mission. So we'll just cut your salary in half. We'll give you benefits because I was worried about benefits with my kids. Mm-hmm. I wasn't willing to just take the leap, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But the short version of that story is that you can do both for a while. And then at a moment, you'll know when it's time.
Yeah.
So I knew it was time for both parties. Hey, I'm just going to go all in on this thing. This has been a great ride. And knowing too that, I mean, honestly, 10 years from now, who knows what the world brings, but I would have no problem going back to working for that large privately held company. And so I always like to stress to people, look, you don't have to quit your job. You love your job, you know, do it and then just do that side hustle. And then when the time's right, you'll know it. Warby Parker, same thing we talked about on that. So I'm not going to regurgitate that entire podcast. But I just wanted to give a framework for those listeners that may have not listened to that podcast. Mm-hmm. In terms of the content itself, you'll hear a lot of people say, post all this content. But you're like, whoa, I don't have the bandwidth to post all that content. So what a big definitive distinction that people need to know is that when people say, let's say Gary Vee says posts 100 pieces of content a day, he's counting a post. If I saw a tweet that I liked and I retweeted that, that counts as a post. So it's not like I'm sitting there, oh, scratching my head, brainstorm. This is a good piece of content. Let me produce it.
Right.
So a lot of it's curation. You're taking other people's content and then redoing that. Sylvia, that's helpful.
But don't you think that is also, people don't want to just see you do that either, right? Or is it like a pie and there's all these different pieces, and so it just depends on if you're promoting yourself and promoting your brand. I guess there's some formula. I thought that it was like how many you create the content, you endorse other people, and now I'm reading about should be more about your customers than yourself.
I mean, we call it posting it forward, that, you know, shine the light on someone else. And so if you, as much as you can, it's hard to do because even with the team sitting here, we always kind of struggle with it and go, guys, got to get back to posting it forward. Meaning that, okay, this person's doing something well, let's shine the light on them. Especially if they mention your name, you got to go out there and do that. So we struggle with it as well, but it's always getting back to, it's not about us. It's about that person, making them feel special. Because you always feel good when someone comments on your stuff. So it's really about just making sure, all right, I'm going out there and commenting. So for you,
right,
it could be, you know who you're trying to reach in terms of getting those people that you're going to help from a job prospect standpoint. Is going out there and going, hey, this is what I found helpful.
Yes. Okay. And then I think in a bigger picture, maybe I'm oversimplifying the whole job search process because I know it's very stressful. There's a lot of insecurities around it for people, but I do think it aligns a lot with what you talk about with finding your superpower. So while a resume is really boring, let's be honest, no one loves writing them. No one loves, I can't say you don't love reading them, but you know, they're not like, oh, I love a resume. But if you can help someone highlight their superpowers, if you will, and in a sense sell themselves, that's what opens a lot of doors of opportunity. So for me, it's become something that seems so, such minutia and boring and awful and awkward. It's easier for me now. And that's what I want to help people take away, sort of that, I don't know if it's the stressful part I'm talking about, but just the, like, nobody wants to do it, right?
Right.
But once you do it and feel good about it, it's like you've created a momentum and a good energy to open a lot of doors. So that's why.
And when your experience, so our listeners out there might be listeners out there, they might be helping a niece, they might be helping a nephew, it might be a friend, or they might actually be looking for a job themselves or to change their career, what's the number one mistake you see when you sit down with someone?
The number one mistake is that we typically, as job seekers, will write the description of our job, and we need to be showing transferable skills and the impact that we had at the organization. So the organization wants to bring us on board because we can help their mission or their, if it's mission, you know, their positive impact. They don't want to just see like a description of our old jobs. And we, as job seekers, just normally will try to tell you like what we did in that role. I think also when you're younger, you're not really thinking of the numbers, the tangible results. I think that's very normal. But then everyone will give you advice and say you need to have tangible numbers and you need to have results. But when you're younger, you're just, quote, doing your job.
Yep.
There's a lot of other things going on when you're younger. So if we can start to pay attention to if an effort that I made helped increase sales, beat a timeline, save client money, those are the kinds of things that future people want to see. And it's really hard to... we tend to not think in those terms of how am I creating that impact.
And are students still creating resumes, or are they creating their LinkedIn profile first and then hitting convert to resume on LinkedIn?
No, so right now they're still doing resumes. We've been looking at that a lot, and I do think one day LinkedIn will replace resumes, but I don't think we're there yet. Students are more comfortable each year with LinkedIn, but there are still some that I'll ask if they are on it. Yes, I'm on it. I haven't done much on it. It doesn't look good. I need to do things to it. So yeah, right now we're still in resumes, but they 100% will go look at your LinkedIn.
And it used to be a big no-no to have your picture on your resume, but now I see more and more with your picture on it, because a picture says 1,000 words. You can kind of read a little bit into someone a little bit more with a photo. But I mean, obviously there's laws and regulations around that. In certain countries, you can't have a picture. Are you seeing, what's your take on the photo on the resume?
So I 100% say don't add your picture to your resume. My thing is, like, that's on LinkedIn. So until told otherwise, like, don't put it on your resume. But there has been articles going around about how younger people are making resumes look a lot like Instagram. More of like visuals and content. And I think this is a bigger conversation around generations, because I think it depends on who's looking at your resume.
Right. The video resume has been slow to take. There's not a lot of video resumes, are there?
Well, I don't think that they've had, well, maybe I'm not sure, but I don't think there's AI right now at most companies that can screen that for people.
But there are AI, the companies are using AI to screen candidates. Like they'll actually be on a call and the AI is asking that candidate question.
Yes, there's lots of video interviews.
Has anyone, as a kind of a PR move, done the counter and had AI talking to the AI? So the job seeker actually had an AI bot talking to the AI bot?
I don't know, but we should look into that.
That'd be good.
Be a weird experience. Does the AI get the job?
There you go. I like it. What are the top jobs that people are looking for?
Oh my God. Right now, product marketing is huge.
Product marketing. This is both at the adult level and at the student.
Oh, I would say probably, well, it depends. So business school, I work in the business school.
Yeah.
Business school, yes.
Business school, it's product marketing.
Product marketing is a really big one. I'm sorry, I work specifically with marketing students, so that's probably a fair. All business, I mean, they're pretty standard. Financial analyst, investment banking, consulting. At the professional level, it's data analytics. Mm-hmm. A lot of people they think that's what they need to be getting into, or what they're finding all the job posts are for, and they're straddling, like, do I have the experience in that? Everybody wants to work in tech. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to work at Google, Facebook, Apple. I think that's normal. I think it's normal to want to work places you've heard or names you've heard of.
Do you get a lot of students that come in and want a job at a small business?
No.
Okay.
Do
you think that's because the people that want to do that are starting their own small business?
I think that's because the students, where they're at and their experiences, it's either startup or a big corporation. I don't know exactly if that's their background or where they grew up or just what they see. And we're in Austin, so there is a lot of that, the startup world here. And there's this perception that at the startup, it's, for lack of a better word, sexy. Yep. They get to work in coffee shops and work remotely and build incredible things. And then corporate, they consider it to be like stifling and they're stuck in a cube, but at the same time, regular paychecks and usually higher pay. So it's interesting to watch. A lot of my students will intern with startups and then decide that's not for them. And a lot will intern with corporate and decide that's not for them.
Yeah, maybe that's a good path to go. Is if you think you're going to be, let's say you think that you're going to excel in a startup, you should take an internship at a huge company.
Yeah.
And then if you think you want to take a job at a huge company, take a job at a startup.
Yeah.
Like kind of take the inverse.
Yeah. And I think that's what's been, because I've been doing coaching the students for 5 years, and that's what's been interesting for me to watch them come in at that first stage and say, I'm interested in this, and then they go intern, and then when they come back and say, oh, I didn't like that. And they're surprised by it, and I'm just kind of, you know, haha, yeah, I knew. But I don't, because they might have loved it too. Yeah. But I think that's what you should allow yourself to do. And if I ever write a book, it's going to be Nothing Is What It Seems, because I feel like that's been what I've learned a lot in life in a good way. A lot of perceptions I had or things I had to do or the way I thought things should be didn't end up being how they were. So it's been a really interesting ride. And if that makes sense, I don't know, to the listeners, I have a corporate marketing background, made the switch into higher ed, and now I'm starting my own business. So it's like.
And now with your own business on the side hustle, so walk me through your day. Like, how do you get, because you have a daughter that's how old?
2.
And then so there's a lot of listeners out there that similar. Like I always say, our stories are all the same. It's the same movie, different actors.
Yeah.
So they're going to get a lot out of this. So walk me through your typical day. I know no day is typical, but what does it look like?
Yeah, so I've had to really realize that you have a finite amount of energy and I have to spend it wisely. And I work on that almost, I would love to say every day, but it's not sometimes hour by hour. So a typical day is the alarm is set for 5:30, which that's hilarious. I would rather not get up at 5:30. But
you get up at 5:30, you don't hit the snooze?
Oh, I hit the snooze.
Okay.
At least once or twice. So.
Because we're doing the focus book right now, and the guy that invented the snooze, his name eludes me right now, but this guy invented the snooze button. Originally, when it came out, it could never go longer than 9 minutes. Here's why. Because once you get beyond 9 minutes, it's a sleep pattern. You've started another sleep cycle. So you're actually doing detrimental impact on you. So, but originally, all the snooze buttons couldn't extend beyond 9 because you're starting another sleep cycle. So
now you just keep it going.
Right.
So at least once or twice, I hit snooze, 100%.
The worst is because the phone... The buttons are pretty close. You can hit the wrong button by mistake. You think you've turned it off or you hit the snooze or you turned it off.
Or there's times I turn it off and then don't really get up. Like, sure, yeah. So that's about, so basically I'm up before 6. Let's put it that way at some point. Usually this is kind of embarrassing to admit, but I walk straight to the kitchen and make coffee. And then it depends. My daughter may have woken up or she may give me a minute, but we have 2 dogs too. So they have to get a walk. So one of us is getting up and doing that or getting ready. And then we get her up and get her ready. And we're out the door by 6:30, 6:45.
Okay.
So I have to shower at night, which I also hate.
Okay.
But, you know, there's only so much time in the morning.
And I learned this having 2 daughters because I always, why are you showering at night? It's because it takes forever to hair dry.
Yes.
So I didn't know that.
Hair dry, yeah.
bingo. My team's looking at me laughing. They're like, how did you not know that?
Like, yeah, you could leave with your wet hair, but it's just, not ideal.
So wait, by show of hands here, there's other, obviously the whole team's here. How many people shower at night? Oh, everybody but me. Interesting.
Okay. I really don't. I would prefer to
that's
shower.
That's awesome. So we had 6.
That's funny.
People shower at night. That's
as
great.
As soon as my daughter gets old enough, man, I'm going back to the morning showers. But for right now, so we're at the door by 6:30, 6:45. Drop her off at daycare, go to work, leave work around 4:30, go get her from daycare, get home, and then it's the whole, like, dinner routine, if she's a bath. Also, we have 2 dogs, they get a walk. Usually, she's in bed by 8.
Okay.
And then, depending on if I have client work to do, that might be when I sit down and do some client work, or if I ask my clients for about a week to get back to them, so I don't have to usually work every single night. I do allow myself some nights to just maybe watch a show or read. My husband is a private chef, so sometimes he has weekly evening events. So if
you married well.
I did. I know. I'm fed very well. Yeah.
That's good. So just that. One of our most popular podcasts is with Anthony Bourdain. So
really? Yeah, that's one of the most popular? Yeah.
Now, a lot of chefs, though, don't cook at home. Does your husband?
He does.
Okay, that's good.
He does, yeah, so hopefully that answers your question about... I think a lot of people are in that boat, and I don't feel like people talk about it much. It's kind of...
They're in the boat of not...
Your day is just...
Just being jammed.
Yeah. Like it's, yeah. And it's every day, all day, and can be very exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when you look at your schedule, there's not much room there. I mean, that's where you might treat the outdoors as part of your indoor working facility, so to speak, when you can. Unfortunately, where you live in a warm place that's most true. Of the year, too that's warm true. Sometimes, but
we won't talk about that. That's not till next year. Yeah. Can we just revisit? So you mentioned that when you're ready to go from your full-time to your business, mm-hmm. you'll just know. Mm-hmm. Is it crystal clear you just know, or is it?
I wish it was crystal clear. That'd be a lot easier, but that's why it's called like taking that jump, right?
Yeah, and so a certain point that you
fortune just favors the bold, right?
Right.
But in this case, you're a little, in my case, I was a little less bold. It's not, I liked my job. I'm not going to just jump out. No, you have all these things in the back of your mind. One thing that helped me is that I always had this connotation that, wow, healthcare would be super expensive. And it is, but it's not as expensive as I thought. When I was going to lose the healthcare for my wife and my two daughters, that was in the back of my mind. But once I did the research, I said, oh gosh, actually it's not as expensive as I thought to be able to do that. So that's one thing, kind of check things out and go, oh, okay, that's worse than I thought, or that's better than I thought, as you just kind of take that leap. But the main thing that helped me the most was I said, could I get a similar job to this one if this fails?
Right.
Like a and that always came back to yes. Like I go, I will be a stronger candidate because I already have, fortunately, this good track record. And then if I do this, I go, look, I wanted to start my own thing, and I found out it wasn't for me. They go, that's a stronger candidate because now he knows what it's like to be an entrepreneur and do all these things. He'll be stronger within our organization. So that's the greatest thing that helped me. And I forgot who told me to do that, but it was great advice. And so I just sat down and go, I think it might have been in one of Dale Carnegie's book, Stop Worrying and Start Living, which is one of my favorite books of all time. Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. And he basically said, just think through the worst scenario. Could you get another job like this? And the answer always came back to me, yes. Whether that's true or not, it just came back to me as a yes.
That's true, though. That makes sense. Yeah. Sounds like it's kind of a general, whatever you have a fear about it, really look at that. Why is that creating a fear? I guess sometimes I feel like I want my cake and I want to eat it, too.
Mm-hmm. No, we all do. Yeah. No, for sure.
Like I want to do UT. Yeah. I want to do Cafe Bon Resume. I want to be a great mom. I want to exercise regularly and have pretty hair every day, you know.
And we were calling that in the new book, Squirrels, that everything's shiny and we love it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you're going, so you just got to stay the course. Because I kind of have some squirrel in me to where I go, I want to do that, want to do that, want to do that, want to do that.
Yeah.
I go, no, let's just do one thing at a time, focus on it, move forward.
Some of it, I think the fear I need to want to dissect as well is I think that my day job gives my side job street cred. So what I mean by that is if I expected people to hire me to help them with their job search.
It 100% makes sense.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
I like that they're like, oh, she's at UT Austin.
Yeah.
And so there's been this fear of like, well, if I wasn't, what does that look like?
Right.
And I know it would still be on my LinkedIn. Yeah.
And you don't, and this isn't, you don't do this, but a lot of folks, what happens, especially in the United States, is your vocation becomes your identity. And so that you go to, and you don't do this, but I'm saying a lot of people, when they go out to a cocktail party, it's, they even when they ask the question, kind of, who are you? They tell people what they do.
Eah.
And that happens a lot in the U.S. is that you become defined by your job, makes sense because it's the most time you're doing throughout the day is at work.
Yeah.
And so if you're at an Apple, so some people I talk to when they go to leave an Apple or Google or Facebook, like there's a certain about University of Texas. There's just that certain amount of, oh, hey, that person's that. And like you said, it also helps your side hustle to have that kind of moniker. But also you'll always have that because once it's like this person formerly worked at XYZ or formerly was at MIT or Harvard.
Well, one of the things I'm hoping to identify in Austin, I've been here 5 years, so I think that's a good amount of time, but I still miss a piece of Chicago. There's something, this woman called Saya Hillman, her name is Saya Hillman, and she has a company called Mac and Cheese Productions. And her
great whole, name.
Yeah, right. She loves mac and cheese, obviously.
It's Chicago. Everyone does up there.
She's all about unnetworking. Okay. So how to meet people and grow and who you are. Not about like going to events and shaking hands and here's my resume and my business card, but what are you doing? And we are talking about me launching an Austin chapter next year, 2020. So I did a lot of her events up in Chicago, took improv classes with her husband, went to her meetups about, you know, positivity and those kinds of things. So I think that would be good for me to just get a little bit more, I shouldn't say integrated because I'm not sure that's the right word, but meeting more professionals in Austin, because a lot of the people I help with Cafe Con Resumea still are my Chicago network. I do have Austin clients, but obviously because my day job is with undergrads, I don't touch that pool here.
Right.
So I'm thinking, another reason why I had reached out to you is that I want my business to grow past just me helping look at your resume.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't sure what that was or what that looked like. I almost wonder if the resume of me helping you feel it has your superpowers in it. Sorry,
right.
I keep going back to that, but like, it's a strong resume, opens doors, but there's a bigger picture to you as a person.
Yeah. Once you get into that resume, it's like a personal brand.
Right.
And you're going to have to, just like any marketer, look at it and go, what's your core strength? And as you dig in on that resume, that's digging in their soul. And so, yeah, you're right. It's bigger than that. You're a life coach once you get into it.
I know, like, but that makes me really nervous.
Yeah.
Yikes.
In terms of networking, what's interesting is something I learned too late, but at least I've learned it, is that I always go, I got to network with this person because what they do. And what I've found is that's not very powerful for either party.
Mm-hmm.
What I've found is I need to network with this person because who they are, meaning that we've connected.
Mm-hmm.
And if they happen to also have what they do, good, great, but it's just too hard to develop that relationship if you don't have that connection.
Well, that's true, because if people reach out to me like, I see you work at UT Austin, let's grab coffee, you're like, okay, like, cool. But that's actually not a bad segue, because so I actually heard of you through my students that had interned with you. I'm going to be totally honest, because if you kind of cut this out.
Yeah. That's good. That means that the interns are having a good time.
Yeah, when I first someone said, I interned with Eric Qualman.
The interns are giving us a thumbs up.
I was like, okay. So the first time you were mentioned, they were like, I interned with Eric Qualman. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I just totally moved on. Like, I didn't think it, so I'm sorry. I didn't think of it. I was like, all right. And then they came up again. They always had really positive experiences. And then I was at NACE, National Association of College Employers Conference, and you were speaking, one of the keynote speakers. And you had a really cool activity where you had people email in the word that they wanted to be remembered for. And so I wrote in compassionate. And then you wrote back. And you said, we should grab coffee. And I was like, what a perfect opportunity for me to pick his brain about what he looks for in interns. Like, sure, I'll meet for coffee. So I thought that was really nice. So, like, I teach a class at UT, so I'd like to incorporate. We're always looking for interactive activities.
Yeah. What do you teach at UT?
So I teach BA 101, which is what is the title? You guys probably know. Career Development Theory. I don't know.
Have you guys taken it?
Everyone has to.
Oh, you have to take it.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to be a professor of a class they have to take. Yeah. That'd be good.
No, it's not that great because they don't
want to
be there.
They don't want to be there. But at least you got some asses in the seats,
that's,
you know?
True. That's true. Good. We take attendance and stuff.
Oh, man. Attendance. Wow.
Yeah, no. So I'm going to try.
Was it a good class? We'll put people on the spot.
Were you in my class?
No.
That would be weird.
Okay.
I used to teach a lot at 8 a.m. You guys, I had a ritual for that. You get yourself Starbucks. And you listen to this song called Let's Go. It's on the Step Up soundtrack. You just repeat on repeat on your way in. And then, and then when you get in, you're all like pumped and your class is like sleepy and they think you're like totally waking
you. Do you have students fall asleep in the class?
Oh, yeah. Not that many.
What do you do when they fall asleep? You just let them sleep?
No, sometimes go up to the side and be like, hey. or sometimes just let them sleep. Anyway, I got off track. My point was creating interactive. That was really cool and unique. And who, somebody asked me, I asked you about it. And you said one of the students had asked, I need some way to interact with the audience.
No, I just came up with that. I go, there's got to be a way for me to figure out, am I doing a good job or not? So I wanted to incorporate a way to connect with the audience. And so that's why I wanted feedback real time, because we'd always wait for the feedback from the company that brought me in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to improve as a speaker. And so I incorporated in my talk a way to engage the audience where it's of value to them. So I asked them, what's the one word they want to be known for? Then they usually shoot that word in, and then away we go. Then we have contacts, and we actually get a lot more business out of it, because a lot of times, or we have connections like you, is that that's been a nice bonus that we didn't anticipate from doing it.
What about the stuff where you do like the thumbs up?
Yeah, I mean, the more I've given public speaking, in at the beginning, I just wanted to give them the message. Then I realized, wait, they want to be part of the message. And so I want to get the audience engaged. Like, I want them part of the, I call them performances because they're part of the performance. So the more I can have them be part of the performance, the better. So whether that's you're teaching at University of Texas or if I brought in the lecture or whatever, is that it's really, I'll do exercises where they physically have to move. But a lot of times it's I'm self-reflection. So I want them to think through about yourself.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question. Are you this? And they're thinking about it, and then they have to move, like raise their thumb. Yes, I am, or no, I'm not. So that they learn a lot about themselves during the course of the performance.
That's awesome. And do you think that's for every generation is interested in that? Because, you know, I'm teaching Gen Zs now.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of research on their learning styles, and I'm noticing it's different.
Yeah. So we have we have both Gen Y, Gen Z. We've got Gen X here. So what are you saying? I'd love to know. What do you think's different?
I'm not saying like the things they want, nobody else wanted.
Yeah.
But they are really wanting information much quicker.
Okay.
Much more, I hate to say entertaining, but like in video format or not just lectures on a slide, which is what college has been for eons.
Yeah. Yeah, there's an old saying that if you took a time machine and went back 100 years ago, the only thing that would look the same is education.
Yeah. Because we have the same classrooms, the same technology in the classrooms. They are so used to being on their phones, but like we don't want them on their phones in class. But is there a way that they could be on there and engaged?
And you're saying the difference between Gen Y and Gen Z is that their Gen Z is more demanding. They want the answer probably because they grew up with Google. They've gotten an answer. Now they've grown up with Alexa. It makes sense. They ask a question, they have an answer.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And not that Gen Y, not that Gen Millennials didn't want, you know, interactivity. I mean, I wanted it, but I feel like for my college experience, you just expected you went to class and got talked at.
Okay.
And now they're like, not having that.
Right.
And that's still sort of how we've been operating. So we're always trying to update our class. But I do think there's ways so we can do things like you've mentioned, like engaging them or helping them be part of it. How does this affect you? Down to little things like what majors interest you. Like we can do things like that.
What do you think is more important if you had to be, you're against the wall? Like what's more important, LinkedIn or a resume? If you had to do one, like which one do you say do?
If you're applying for jobs, I would say resume right now, but I could be wrong. I mean, I know
when we interview, I don't really look at the resume. I look at a little bit, I look at LinkedIn. I'm trying to find information about them online to see what they do. Now, obviously we skew more digital what we do, but I do look at it when it's there. It's just, I'm looking hardcore at other items.
Well, if you were mass applying to things, can you mass apply through LinkedIn? Yes, on the LinkedIn platform, but not on Indeed or anywhere else, right?
Well, you made a good point earlier, is that there's antiquated systems at all these companies. And so you have to use so an ADP has to take a resume in a certain format. That makes sense.
I really think we'll get to LinkedIn one day, but I don't know. It would be an investment on the company side.
Yeah.
I think LinkedIn's done a nice job of trying to be like that people's basically online portfolio or website if you don't want to build your own. I don't know. I have heard students get opportunities on LinkedIn, but I have not heard a lot of people I work with and professionals that find stuff. They feel like it goes into a black hole.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly if you were just to apply on LinkedIn. I think it would depend. I know when I was a recruiter, we only posted job postings on LinkedIn if they're really hard to fill roles because it's very expensive. So from a job seeker standpoint, we call it the hidden job market. So there's job postings that aren't even posted. They don't need to be you can go to your current interns and say, do you have any friends?
Right.
And then you don't have to post it and deal with all that. So there's a lot of that.
And then if someone's looking for a job right now out there, what's like 1, 2, 3? 1, 2, 3.
Absolutely have to get out from behind your computer. Like, you cannot just apply and click, click, click. Like, you're going to be so disappointed. A book I really love and recommend, it's called The 2-Hour Job Search. So using technology to get the right job faster. He is actually the director of career services at Duke Fuqua School of Business. I've seen him speak twice. NACE was the first time I saw him in 2015. And his whole thing is we weren't teaching students how to find jobs outside of the job board at school. So he has a process, and he talks a lot about how to use LinkedIn wisely. So you're reaching out to your alumni network, people you may know.
So you say get out behind your computer. What do you mean? Like
call, like reach out and see if someone would grab a coffee with you, or if someone maybe would let you interview them 15 minutes on the phone about what they do with their job. That worked for me, I think, switching into higher ed. I reached out to the woman and asked if we could go to lunch. She said yes, which was great. She told me what, this was in Chicago, told me what she did. And then that led to giving me knowledge of where to start looking and applying. So had she not agreed to go to lunch, I don't know that I'd be sitting here. Like maybe I wouldn't have had information I needed. I wish people didn't think networking was a dirty word. So let's say groups that you can network at. I don't know. Meetup.com has a ton. Obviously, in any of your cities you're in, if they have even like public library events, there's things that you get out and meet people. And when you go to these things, go for the content or the learning opportunity, not to get a job per se.
Right.
But I promise you will either meet someone or get an idea that then leads to like, this is what I need to pursue.
And I always tell people a couple things. One, you mentioned LinkedIn, is look at, say you want to get an XYZ company. Look at all the alumni that went to the same school that you did.
Exactly.
And just call in and go, or send them a note and say, hey, I've seen you've been super successful in your career. You went to the same school that I did. You had the same major, it looks like. I just want to sit down with you for 9 minutes. So I always say, send a weird number. You don't remember it.
That's
you say
a good point.
But if you say something specific, they go, okay, it's just 9 minutes, a 9-minute coffee. Don't say coffee. It's like, give a specific weird number. It could be 17 minutes, 9 minutes, something that's short. It'll go beyond that if things go well.
Sure.
But, and then tell them, I just want to learn how you got where you are. And then at no point should you bring up that you know that there's jobs available there. Let them do that. And then they'll become your advocate. So that's one way to do it. And then also, if you go to these networking events, there's usually speakers, or normally there's a panel. Is that everyone wants to talk to the panelists, go and talk to the moderator. Because more times than not, the moderator is actually the biggest A player on the stage. Because the conference, in my mind, mistakenly has the A player moderate. And the A player, and no one wants to talk to the moderator. They're trying to talk to the panelists.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And so go talk to the moderator. One, there's less crowded, but also two, more times than not, they're the biggest player on that stage.
Yeah, because they pretty much helped organize the whole thing, so they would know, So yeah, totally agree. It's definitely your alumni network is usually happy to help you. I've had clients that will say they didn't feel their alumni network is very strong. Well, then, okay, let's look at any orgs you are in. They could be national organizations. They could be people you know. Basically finding an advocate, somebody that's willing to speak up for you. And what a lot of people don't realize is that companies have employee referral programs. So people are happy to pass along your resume. They're not shouting that from the rooftops, you know, but if you reach out, I would pass along your resume because I might get paid if you get hired. I'm also not going to tell you that either. And I know places I've worked that was, you didn't even really have to know the person. You could submit it and say like friend of a friend or something. So it wasn't like taking your reputation, if that makes sense. People, so I tell my students that all the time because they're afraid to ask. And I'm like, don't be afraid to ask. That person might be happy to pass along your resume. But on the flip side.
Yeah, sometimes the greatest thing you do to help someone, it took me a long time to learn, is to ask someone for a favor. Because most of us are like, when someone asks me for a favor and it's something I want to grant, sometimes it's just an immediate no. And I've gotten better at that because I'm doing this focus project. It's just an immediate, sorry, I'm busy. I'm doing this. But other times, it's they've given me the gift because I can help them out.
Sure.
And so it's helped me better at asking for favors as well.
Well, the other thing is they, on the flip side of that, like we absolutely cannot take offense if we don't hear back. So, for example, let's say I reached out to you because you went to the same school as me and you're sitting on a plane and you see the email come in, oh, turn phone off, turn off, it gets marked red. You go to your trip, your business trip, you do your presentation. It wasn't personally. You had other things. And so people will be like, well, I reached out and I didn't hear. And I'm like, can't take that personally. And same with LinkedIn. So people use it differently. I have it set up that if you send me a message there, I will get an email. Mm-hmm. Some people don't have that. So that means I need to go literally look at LinkedIn. Most people are not on there every day all day.
No, not at all. No.
Like a recruiter. So my point is, again, like, don't worry too much about those that you don't hear back from. Find those that will be your advocates. And we're seeing about a 50% response rate, which is pretty good. That means one out of two people would like to help you out. So.
And unless you're crazy, you're not over bothering these people when you reach back out.
Well, that's a whole
other, yeah. You're actually showing that you're passionate, that you really want it. And I was actually talking to this girl on the plane the other day. And so she had gone to the interview for a dream job and she didn't get it and was surprised. And so she sent in another note just saying, hey, I had a really good experience. To be honest, I was really surprised. I thought I was a perfect fit. And then they go, wait. No, no, this is a glitch. You are supposed to be... You should have been through this process. And long story short, she got the job.
I'm so glad she wrote that.
So yeah, just by making sure. So it's just a glitch in their system that fell through the cracks. And so
that's great, because if she hadn't said anything,
right,
thought she didn't get it.
Yeah. What's the best advice you've ever been given in life?
I think I remember distinctly my mom telling me I shouldn't should on myself today.
Shouldn't should on yourself?
Don't should on yourself today. And I was like, what? Basically, don't think you should do this, you should do that. Don't worry too much about that stuff. Or things aren't always the way you think they should be, or something like that. So
right.
That's really good advice.
That's good. Yeah, we call those chameleons in the new book. That you do stuff because you think you should, because it's your parents think you should, or that your boss thinks you should, or you think you should, even though the other person's not actually thinking that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I like that. That's good advice. What's the best outside of my books and podcast here? What's kind of your favorite? It could be a book, could be a podcast. What should the listeners go out there? Something that you know they'd benefit from?
So I've actually found a lot of value in this podcast. Nora Borealis, Terrible, Thanks for Asking.
Okay.
It's been surprisingly inspiring for me because I got into a bunch of podcasts about your side hustle and small business and all these things. And her... podcast is strictly for people telling their stories of when something, like if I were to say, how are you? And you were able to answer honestly and the answer was terrible. Thanks for asking. And it sounds awful, right? Like it sounds depressing. Right. They always end with, you know, kind of the inspirational point or what they learned from that. Or And then she's really funny. And they're about an hour long.
Okay.
So they're good in Austin traffic. And that's been surprisingly something that's gave me lots of new thinking, I feel like.
That's good. What's the name of it again?
Terrible Thanks for Asking.
Terrible Thanks for Asking.
Nora Borealis. And I'm currently reading a book called Remix. Also, I'm reading Eric's books. But I'm reading, it's by Lindsay Pollack, and it's about leading a multi-generational workspace. I'm trying to learn about how all of us are working amongst lots of generations and different styles and work ethics, and I'm super fascinated by it. It's not a new thought. It was my favorite grad class, actually. My last class for grad school was diversity in the workplace. And I honestly thought it was going to be about women and men and black versus white. And I was so wrong. It was about age.
Okay.
And that I'm the first generation that was going to be in a workplace with like four generations, and now we're up to five. Ooh. And I'm just really fascinated by how each of us, what we were taught or our environments and how that affects work and technology and all that. So I'm reading that slowly but surely. I'm reading that.
Awesome. Well, that's been a mic drop. Tina, how can people learn more about you, Erin?
So I would love it if people would go to my website, Cafe Cone Resume, CafeConResume.com, or like the Facebook page. I try to share relative job search articles there under the same name, Cafe Cone Resume.
Awesome. Well, love it.
Thank
love
you
to
for
have you in here. It's
me.
Great. Thank you for listening to today's Super U podcast. This is Equal Man reminding all of us, until next time, it's not what we take from the world, it is what we leave behind.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super U.